Here is your Radio Theater Channel weekly podcast for download. The RTC still has the very best old-time radio on the live streaming. And if it's music you love, tune in to the RTC Music Channel, where this link and many others are on our website at oldtimeradiolisten.com. Now, here's Jim.
It's the RTC Weekly Download. I'm your host, Jim Dolan, and I thank you for joining us. We start this week's show with another letter sent to Box 13 at the Star-Times newspaper. It's another job for crusading reporter Dan Holliday.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
Box 13, care of the Star-Times. I should like very much to see you and offer a proposition which could be of mutual profit to us. Of course, there is some danger involved. But then, your advertisement asks for adventure. So if you are interested, perhaps we could have lunch tomorrow afternoon. Say 1 o'clock.
Perhaps we could have lunch tomorrow afternoon. Say at 1 o'clock. The Golden Arrow. Ask for Mr. Waring's table. There's some danger involved, he said. Yes, that's what the man said. And, brother, that's exactly what he meant.
And now, back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, Daytime Nightmare.
Well, at least this letter invites you to lunch, Mr. Holliday.
Uh-huh. Lunch, and then what?
Danger, it says. That sounds exciting.
It always does. You know, Susie, someday I'm going to walk into one of these things and not walk out.
Then follow up one of these other letters. There's one that asks for a babysitter. The woman says her children are an adventure.
Oh, no, thanks. I'll take Mr. Waring's letter and his proposition.
Then you'd better hurry. It's almost 12:30 now.
Oh, don't push, Susie. Don't push.
What time will you be back?
Probably this evening. But don't wait for me. Just lock up the office and take off. So long, Susie. The Golden Arrow was one of those ultra dining and luncheon spots where you can get a swell dollar lunch for five. I asked for Mr. Waring's table, and the waiter showed me to a nice secluded corner. A small orchestra was playing. A couple were dancing. And Mr. Waring was just sitting there. I took a good look at him before I sat down. He was big and handsome. Maybe about 50. And the diamond he flashed on the little finger of his right hand was spelled with 1,500 capital dollars. He looked up, saw me standing there.
How do you do? You're Box 13?
Yes, that's right. You're Mr. Waring.
And you're right. Please, sit down. I've ordered lunch. I hope you approve.
Oh, thanks. I'm sure I will.
You're younger than I expected.
Oh, disappointed?
No, no. Please. Tell me, is Box 13 the way you make your living?
Well, not quite.
Yeah, I read your advertisement several times. Adventure wanted, go any place, do anything, write Box 13.
Is that said with disapproval?
No, not at all, Mr.
Dan Holliday.
Oh. No, not disapproval, Dan, just regret. Regret that I hadn't the nerve to do such a thing when I was your age.
Well, sometimes the regrets are mine.
Huh? Oh, I see. You mean once in a while you get something that's hard to handle.
That's it.
But you've always come out on top.
Well, I've had a lot of luck.
Is there any of it left?
Do I need some?
If you do what I ask, you will.
All right. What's on your mind, Mr. Waring?
First, we'll have lunch. Then we'll talk. Will that be all right with you?
If you say so, yes.
Good. Charles, you may bring our lunch now. Now let's enjoy ourselves. There's lots of time to get serious after lunch.
Well, Waring was a very good conversationalist. I learned he was an attorney for one of the biggest estates in the country. He kept leading the conversation around to that every time we got on something else. Then when lunch was over...
Enjoy it, Dan?
Very much.
Cigar?
Oh, no, thank you.
Now, if you'll come with me.
Come with you? But I thought we were going to talk.
Well, I'd rather have more privacy. You'll understand why when I tell you what I have in mind.
It's that important, huh?
Would you say $10 million was important?
It commands attention, yes.
Then please come with me.
We left the Golden Arrow. The doorman saluted Waring and signaled the big limousine that sneaked up along the curb and purred to a stop.
Please, get in, Dan.
Pardon me. Where are we going?
Oh, for a ride through the park.
Wait a minute. I want to know what this is all about before I go in place.
You're not very trusting, are you, Dan?
It's not that.
Something wrong, Dan? Get in the car, Dan. A little air will make you feel better. Go on, get in. All right, Bert. You know where to go.
I'd been drugged before, so I knew what it felt like. Felt exactly like this. I came crawling out of the long, dark tunnel with a buzzing in my ears, my mouth dry as cotton. I was lying down and I reached out my arms. I was on a cot. A nice white cot in a nice white room. I sat on the edge of the bed, looked around. There was a window, but there were bars over it. I went to the door. Hey! Hey, open up! Open this door! Open this door, somebody! Come on, open the door!
Get away from the door. Get away from it.
Open it up, whoever you are.
Move back away from it, and I will. Go on.
I moved back and away. There was a pause, and then...
Well, Mr. Stokes, you've awakened at last.
Stokes? What are you talking about? Come on, get me out of this gag, or I'll break my way out.
Samuel, Hugo!
Sir?
Now, Mr. Stokes, you don't want Samuel and Hugo to take care of you, do you?
What is this?
Sit down, Mr. Stokes. Please. Sit down.
I won't sit down. Where's Waring?
He'll be here in a moment. You want to see Mr. Waring? I'm sure that can be arranged.
Well, that's better. Call off those mastiffs in white coats.
Wait outside, Samuel, Hugo. And close the door. Go ahead. I'll be all right. Stay where you are, Mr. Stokes.
Look, if this is a gag, let's run it off the boards and put a tag to it.
Gag? Why, Mr. Stokes, you sound almost rational.
Rational? What are you talking about?
Just that. I've no doubt that in a year, perhaps a little more, we can discharge you.
You mean this is no gag?
No, it's not a gag. You're Edward Stokes. Remember that. You're Edward Stokes.
Where's Waring?
He'll be here to see you, with your wife.
My wife?
Of course. I wonder if you remember her.
I don't know what you're trying to get away with, but if I have to play rough, I can play it.
Samuel! Hugo! I think Mr. Stokes needs to be quieted. Take care of it, Samuel.
Get them away from me.
When you've decided to be more calm, Mr. Stokes, we can have a talk in my office. Until then, I shall take precautions against your homicidal tendencies.
Well, it was no gag. Samuel and Hugo were too big for games, and they played rough. Samuel left, and Hugo sat beside the bed to watch me. I knew now where I was. A sanitarium. But why? Why was I called Edward Stokes? I had to find out, so I turned to Hugo.
What?
Oh. Hugo, these straps are hurting me.
No thanks, Mr. Stokes. I can't loosen them for you.
Look, get my clothes. Take out my wallet. Take the money that's in it and just let me get to a telephone.
I'm sorry, Mr. Stokes. You know that's against the rules.
Who was the man who spoke to me before?
That's Mr. Cordell.
Mister? Not a doctor?
Well, yes and no. This here's a kind of a rest home.
Does everyone get as much rest as I do?
Hey, you're all right, Mr. Stokes. That's pretty funny.
Yeah, I'm dying. Where are my clothes?
No. We'll get them for you later.
Look, I'm not Edward Stokes. I'm Dan Holliday. Get it? My name's Dan Holliday. I'm a writer.
Well, I'll bring you a pencil and paper later.
Hugo, go to a phone. Call the number I'll give you and ask for Susie.
Has she got a sister for me?
Now listen, you big lummox. This is a frame-up. I'm not Edward Stokes. I don't know who he is. I never even heard of him. I'm Dan Holliday, a writer.
Yeah, okay. I believe you. Once I took care of a man who was Shakespeare. I believed him. I also took care of Michelangelo, Dante, Spinoza. Why,
I want to see Cordell.
What for?
I want to talk to him.
What about?
Does that make any difference?
Yeah, because if it's not important, he'll get mad at me.
All right. Tell him I remember now that I'm Edward Stokes. It all comes back to me. Now, will you go to him?
Yeah, okay, but please, Mr. Stokes, don't try what you did before. I hate to get rough.
Right, I promise.
Ah, it's a good boy. And keep on being a good boy, and you'll be allowed visitors this afternoon.
I'll be very happy to see them. Very happy.
All right, Mr. Stokes, I brought you to see Mr. Cordell like you asked. Now, promise you'll take it easy?
Oh, sure. Thanks, Hugo.
That's nothing. Here he is, Mr. Cordell.
Good. Close the door and wait outside, Hugo.
You sure you'll be all right, Mr. Cordell?
I think Mr. Stokes has learned his lesson.
Sure. Please be a good boy now.
Yeah, I will, Hugo.
So, you've become reconciled, Mr. Stokes.
I know I can talk myself blue in the face to Hugo or anyone else around here and not get anywhere. But I want you to tell me what this is all about.
I'll be glad to. You're Edward Stokes. You're here for arrest. You were formerly at the Millhaven Sanitarium, but your wife thought this would be a better place. Don't you remember?
Remember? Oh, of course I do. You've made it all so clear.
Good, good. Oh, by the way, you're looking so much better than when I saw you last, Mr. Stokes. Would you like to see how much better?
What do you mean?
There's a mirror on the door of that closet to your right. Open it and see how you've improved.
I looked in the mirror. I didn't see Dan Holliday. I saw a stranger. Cordell's voice came to me from a million miles away.
There's some gray in your hair, of course, but that's to be expected. As a whole, it's still a nice, deep, rich black.
My hair's been dyed.
Has it? I'll bet you think it was once blonde. I imagine you think your name was once Dan Holliday. Take a good look at yourself, Mr. Stokes. Get acquainted with your new personality. You'll be with it for quite a while.
Cordell smiled at me. Then I knew for certain this was no joke. I was Edward Stokes. My hair dyed, clever touches of makeup here and there. Even Susie wouldn't have known me.
Do you know why you've become Edward Stokes?
Why, Mr. Cordell?
Because Mr. Edward Stokes is dead.
Back to Daytime Nightmare, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
Well, there was a twist. I was a dead man, yet I was alive and being kept alive. But for what? Later in my room, I thought of making a break for it. But there was always Samuel and Hugo. Then later, I was taken again to Cordell's office. This time, Hugo went in with me. Cordell wasn't alone. With him were Waring and a woman. The woman looked at me as I entered.
Edward. Edward, darling.
Would you mind just calling me Dan?
Please, Edward. You remember me?
Of course you remember your wife, don't you, Edward?
Oh, hello, Waring. I must buy you lunch sometime.
Lunch? Oh, of course.
I told your wife and Mr. Waring that you were so much better, Mr. Stokes. But now you've disappointed me.
Oh, I'm so sorry, Mr. Cordell.
Hugo, please wait outside. I'll call you if I need you.
Sure, Mr. Cordell.
He does look like Edward.
Must you say it so loud, Philip?
Oh, sorry.
How long does this go on?
Not much longer. Of course, it all depends on you.
Yes, how?
We'll leave that until later. Clarice.
What?
You've got to sign those transfer papers.
They're all right?
Of course. Oh, Edward... It might be interesting for you to watch yourself being committed.
I'm warning all of you. I'm going to get out of here. And when I do, I...
And when you do what?
Where's the real Edward Stokes?
How does he know about Edward?
Cordell, did you open your mouth?
What's the difference? He can babble his head off and no one will pay any attention.
Suppose something goes wrong.
How can it? It's all too perfect.
Of course it is. Sign the papers, Clarice. Get it over with. Good. Now let's go.
Nothing can go wrong.
Not unless you double-cross me.
You've got your money, and you're in as deeply as anyone. You better see that everything goes all right.
It will.
Fine. Now, goodbye, Edward, and good luck. Come along.
Well, Mr. Stokes, you're now officially in my care.
That should make everything just ducky.
Oh, it will.
If it's not asking too much, what happens now?
My dear Mr. Stokes, if you knew, you wouldn't like it.
What's to prevent me from reaching across this desk and knocking your head off, just for the fun of it?
This gun will prevent it.
You wouldn't dare use it.
No, not directly. But suppose you did try something. Suppose we struggled and the gun went off accidentally.
Suppose it did?
And killed you. Who would be your witness? Not you. You'd be dead. Not Hugo, because he saw you attack me this morning.
Cordell leaned back in his chair and grinned. Then he laid the gun on the desk. It was so close to me. So close. He knew what I was thinking because his grin widened. But I had to take the chance. I jumped. Stay right there, Cordell.
All right. Now that you've got the gun, what will you do?
Hand me that phone.
Certainly. Here you are.
Keep your hands on top of the desk.
With pleasure. Whom are you going to call?
The police.
All right, go ahead. Hugo! Hugo! What's the matter?
Mr. Stokes.
Be careful, Hugo. He's raving.
Hugo, you've got to believe me. I'm not Edward Stokes. I'm Dan Holliday. Give me 2 minutes to put through a phone call.
No, Mr. Stokes. You don't want to do anything with that gun. Better give it to me like a good boy.
Hugo, please. Please stay back.
Careful, Hugo. He may shoot.
Stay back, Mr. Cordell. I can handle him.
Hugo, listen to me. Listen to me. Give me 2 minutes on that phone. Just 1 minute.
Mr. Stokes? Give me that gun. Come on, give it to me.
Wait, Hugo. Wait, I don't want to shoot. But I'll have to do it if you come any closer.
Better not.
Hugo, I'm in a spot. The real Edward Stokes is dead, Hugo. He's been killed by his wife and his attorney. Listen to me. Stand still and listen to me.
Easy. Easy, Mr. Stokes. Easy.
The real Stokes has been killed. He was taken from the first sanitarium and killed. I was brought here, Hugo. Brought here to impersonate Stokes. Cordell wants me to shoot you, Hugo, so I can be killed legally.
Sure,
Stokes.
Sure, sure.
Hugo!
I know all that, Mr. Stokes, but... But if you'll just...
Hugo. Hugo.
I'm afraid you killed him, Stokes.
Cordell, you shot the poor devil.
Of course I did, Mr. Stokes.
You shot him with another gun you just took out of that drawer.
That's perfectly true, Mr. Stokes.
Ballistics can prove which gun killed Hugo.
That's true, too, Mr. Stokes. But who would think of ballistics in connection with a maniac?
Cordell stood there, smoking gun in his hand. Oh, it was a beautiful frame. In a second, the rest of the people in the place would crowd into that office. What chance would I have? None. I could talk myself into a lather. Cordell put the gun back onto his desk.
Well, Mr. Stokes, what now?
I can prove I didn't shoot this gun.
Think you'll get the chance?
I'll be back. Get out of the way.
Be careful, all of you. Don't chase after him. He's got a gun. He killed Hugo. Stay back. Let him go. Send out a general alarm.
I ran out into the night, out into the rest of my nightmare. I cleared the grounds of the rest home and took to the woods. There was only one thing in my favor, the darkness. I stayed in the woods, but I had to get to a phone. I don't know how long I walked. Maybe an hour, maybe two. Then I saw a house. There were lights in it. I hesitated, but I had to get to that phone.
Is that you, Wally?
Yeah, it's me.
Just a minute.
Don't scream, please. Get back.
Please don't.
Look, I'm not going to hurt you. I want to get to a phone. Have you got one?
No. There's no phone here.
Where's the nearest one?
The filling station down the road.
Have you got any men's clothes here?
In the closet.
Would you mind getting them out?
Go away, please. I won't tell anybody you've been here, but don't hurt me, please.
You know who I am?
The radio, they said.
How long ago?
Oh, half an hour, maybe.
Get those clothes for me, please. Get them.
All right. They won't fit you. They're too small.
I don't care about that. Throw them on the table there. Just trousers and coat.
All right.
I pulled the trousers and coat on over the pajamas I was wearing. The woman watched me and she watched the door. She was expecting someone. Wally, probably her husband. Then...
Please go now.
How far is that filling station?
Oh, about 2 miles.
There's no phone closer than that?
No.
All right, you stay in here. You're not going to get hurt. Just stay in here until you're sure I'm far enough away. You get that?
Yes, I won't move.
Good. I'll return the clothes later. She screamed. I could hear her screams fading into the night as I ran. I had 2 miles to go, 2 miles through the brush and woods. I couldn't risk getting to the road. Then I heard something. I ran. I ran until my legs were torn by the brush. I ran until my breath choked in my throat. Then I saw the station, but I couldn't get to it. I crept closer and lay down in the mud-filled ditch. I knew then what a fox must feel like with the hounds tearing at his heels. I listened. I heard Cordell's voice.
Well, to begin with, he's dark-haired, wearing pajamas. Huh? But he may have picked up some clothes somewhere.
I haven't seen anybody.
Better be careful of him, Clade. He's got a gun. Already killed a man back at the home. Don't take no chances. Shoot to kill.
I will, Sheriff. Thanks for warning me.
Okay, Clade. Oh, got a gun?
Sure, always keep one in the station.
Good. Keep your radio turned on, too. We're running bulletins on the air. That way you can tell if he's headed this way.
Sure. See you later, Sheriff.
Remember, he's dangerous.
A homicidal maniac. Take no chances.
Okay, Mr. Cordell, thanks. Go on.
So long, Clade.
I watched the attendant, Clade, go back into the filling station. I watched him take a gun from a drawer and shove it into his pocket. I crept across the road. My stomach hurt from pressing it close against the concrete. Clade came out of the station, looked up and down the road. Then he turned off the lights and locked the door. Don't take another step.
Hmm?
Don't look around. Don't reach for that gun in your pocket.
What are you going to do?
Nothing. You won't get hurt. I want to use the phone in the station.
It's out of order.
You're lying.
I'm not lying. Why don't you try it?
Where are the keys to the door?
In my pocket.
Keep your hands out of that pocket.
You want the keys, don't you?
Keep your back turned. I know that gun is in your coat pocket. Keys there, too?
No, in my trousers.
Reach in. Get them out. But be careful. Now, unlock the station door and go in ahead of me. Never mind the lights.
Look, why don't you give me your gun? You haven't got a chance, fella. The roads are crawling with prowl cars. They were here just a minute ago.
Yes, I know what I saw them. Now reach in that coat pocket. Back to me. Reach in and take out that gun. All right. Hold it by 2 fingers and drop it on the floor. Go on. Now, stand over there while I use the phone.
It's out of order, I told you.
Stay where you are. Hello. Hello.
I told you.
Where's another phone?
The nearest one's about 5 miles down the road.
You're lying.
Like I was about this phone? Look, please, why don't you give up? Give me that gun, we'll go into town. Please. They'll shoot you down on sight if you leave here alone.
I've got to take that chance.
No, you don't. I want to give you a break, fella. I want to give you a break because...
Because?
Once I saw a dog shot. A dog they all said was mad. It wasn't mad. All it wanted was water. But they shot it without giving it a chance. Please, give me your gun.
Look, if I tell you a story, you won't believe it. I know you won't.
Maybe I will. Go ahead.
I'm not Edward Stokes. I'm not the man they're hunting for. He's dead. Killed by his wife and his attorney.
What?
I think because they want his estate. If I'm killed as Stokes, they'll identify me as him.
Please, give me the gun.
You don't believe me, do you?
I believe only that if you leave here and get out on that road, you'll be shot down.
I...
You're hurt.
Never mind. Get me to a phone.
I can't.
All right, here. Take the gun. Take it.
That's the way, fella.
Now you've got the gun. I want you to do one thing. Get me to a phone. Let me call the police. Let me identify myself, will you?
Come on. I've got a car.
Clade got me to a phone. I called Lieutenant Kling and told him the story. And less than an hour later, the sheriff, his men, Clade, and I walked into Cordell's office.
Oh, you got him. Good work, Sheriff.
Yeah, we got him.
I'm surprised you took him alive.
Yeah, so are we. Mind stepping over here a minute, Mr. Cordell?
What for?
Get over.
What is this?
You'll find the gun that killed Hugo in that drawer, Sheriff.
What? Why, this man's mad, Sheriff.
I heard different from the city.
Look out.
Hey, take it easy, Cordell.
Get that gun, Sheriff. That's the gun that killed Hugo, not the one I gave Clayt. You were right, Mr. Cordell. No one would have thought of ballistics to see which gun had killed Hugo. Now I think I need a bath and a nice long rest.
Were arrested on suspicion of murder. Police are searching for the body of Edward Stokes. Gee, Mr. Holliday.
Well, it wasn't nice, Susie. But let's forget it.
Sure, I know what you mean. Oh, say, I have to remind you.
Of what?
You've got a luncheon appointment today at...
Luncheon? Oh, no, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with this week's original story by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. Part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. Box 13 is a Mayfair production from Hollywood. Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
Next, it's the energetic talents of Danny Kaye. From February of 1945, it's the Danny Kaye Show with guest Jack Benny. Danny sends Jack a Valentine.
This is the Danny Kaye Show with Eve Arden, Lionel Stander, Bob Jellison, Kitty Callan, Buddy DeVito, yours truly, Ken Niles, and the outstanding music of America's top band, Harry James and his music makers. Yes, neighbors, for your entertainment, Pabst Blue Ribbon 33 Fine Brews blended into one great beer presents 33 fine talents blended into one great comedian. Danny Kaye.
Hello, airport. This is Danny Kaye again. Is the 7:30 plane going to take off on time? What? Oh, well, do you think there's a chance of it getting through? Well, how's the weather over the Rockies? Well, all right. If you're ready to take the chance, I will. Goodbye.
Danny, are you taking a plane trip again?
Oh, no. I just wanted to see if it was safe to send this letter airmail.
All that fuss about an airmail letter. I'm surprised you didn't ask for a fighter escort.
Say, that's a... Oh, you. That's a pretty good idea. Hello, airport?
Get off that phone.
Evie, this isn't just an ordinary letter, you know. It's a Valentine.
Oh, a Valentine. Well, that is precious cargo. Who are you valentining to?
Oh, it's to my pal, Jack Benny.
Oh.
Well, he is my pal.
I believe you. You're sending it to New York, then?
Yes, by way of Rochester. Look, dear Jack Benny, thanks so many for being so sweet to me. Though I take beer and Skittles for my usual victuals, for you, L.S., I'll have tea.
Well, that's really very sweet.
Yes, and look what Jack sent me.
Oh, a heart-shaped box from Jack Benny.
Yeah, and look what's in it.
What in the world is that? A feather duster's mother-in-law?
Oh, no, honey, that's Jack's toupee.
Oh, that can't be his toupee. I've seen him many times, but I never saw him wearing anything like this.
Well, Evie, this is an old one. He wore this when he was a boy. Jack says it's his good luck piece.
Oh, it looks more like a museum piece.
You mean a heirloom?
Oh, no!
Gosh, I wonder how I'd look in one of these things.
Hello, Miss Arden.
Hello, Lionel. Where have you been?
Well, with St. Valentine's Day approaching, I've been busy composing a lyrical sonnet in monosyllabic pentameter.
Hey, what's the matter, Lionel? Don't you say hello to me?
Well, what a surprise. Hello, Mr. Benny.
Take off that toupee.
Hey, it's Danny. You know, that's the first time I ever saw a head of hair with a head on it.
Danny, will you stop wearing that second-hand hairdo?
Well, what else can I do with it?
Well, why don't you throw it in the back of a wagon, call up a bunch of people, and you can all go for a hayride.
Oh, Evie. Say, Lionel, who are you sending your Valentine to?
Oh, a little girl whose picture I saw in the paper. My pin-up girl.
Oh, this has real suspense. Who can your pin-up girl be?
You'll see. I'll read it.
Yeah.
It ain't that you're so pretty that makes me pen this note. I love you, Gravel Gertie. Yours truly, Gravel Troat.
Gravel Troat? Ain't that romantic?
Say, Danny, what kind of a Valentine did you write?
Well, on Valentine's Day, it's usual for the heart to grow warm and tropical. So I made mine a calypso.
Calypso? What's that?
Well, listen and you'll hear. I send Valentine greetings near and far to nobody in particular. I address it with heart and soul that yearn to whom it may concern. RSVP.
Boy, that was great, Danny. It was really great.
Well, well, Ken Niles, am I glad to see you.
Well, hello, Danny. Hiya, gang. You know, I've just finished writing a Valentine to my favorite.
Your favorite girl?
No, my favorite beer, Pabst. Listen, a Valentine today I've penned in praise of my Blue Ribbon blend. A beer that's welcomed far and wide, that's bought with confidence, served with pride. I love each blend. I love each brew, not 31 or 32. Blue Ribbon Beer, you know it's true. I love all 33 of you.
Hey, I'm getting thirsty.
Where'er folks go their beer to buy, Blue Ribbon's sure to satisfy. On Seidel's rim or glass's lip, it has the suds I love to sip. No better beer, no blend so fine. Oh, Pabsty, be my Valentine. I'll shout your praise for miles and miles. Your faithful boyfriend, Kenneth Niles.
You said it. About Pabst Blue Ribbon, you ain't kidding.
Fibbing is the word on there.
Oh, Fibbing.
Well, that's all very nice. But if you'll excuse me, I think I'll go down and mail my Valentine.
You want me to ring for the elevator, Danny?
Nah, it's a beautiful day. I think I'll walk.
But it's 20 floors.
Well, then maybe I better take the elevator. See you later.
I'm a calypso singer.
Oh, hello, Mr. K. You're going up or down?
I'm going down, Jellison.
Oh, thank goodness. I hate to go up.
You do?
Yes. Every time I go higher than the 20th floor, I black out.
You black out? Well, how long have you been operating this elevator?
I just soloed last week.
Well, you got your wings pretty quickly, didn't you?
Oh, no. I had over 200 hours as observer on the freight elevator.
Well, pilot,
let's take off.
Okay. Contact.
Contact.
Off we go into the wild beyond the night.
Say, you go for this life, don't you?
Oh, yes. I like to live dangerously.
Well, here we are. That was a nice, smooth trip.
Oh, thank you. Oh, there's my next mission. 15 more and I get my furlough.
Well, where to this time?
Non-stop to the mezzanine.
Well, happy landings.
Roger. Roger.
For a musical and vocal Valentine, Buddy DeVito joins Harry James and his music makers as they play Cole Porter's famous love song, Night and Day.
You sang that in a true Valentine spirit, which is Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Say, Danny, on account of Valentine's, how about us doing a real romantic play wherein I am the leading man and at least four beautiful women are swooning at my feet?
Ah, you only want four beautiful women, huh?
Well, one beautiful one is enough, but the other three should have money.
Well, I have a little Valentine play we can do, and you, Lionel, You can be the lover.
Ooh. Lionel, the lover? That'll set passion back 50 years.
There's a swell part in it for you, too, Evie.
There is?
Yeah. You know, every Valentine play has a young, beautiful, and charming girl in it.
Oh, is there a part like that in your play, Danny?
Sure. And you're going to be her mother.
I hate you. Well, if Lionel's going to be the lover, you're still doing me a favor.
Who's going to be Eve's beautiful daughter, Danny?
Well, you know that cute little thing in Harry James' orchestra?
You mean a piccolo?
No, Lionel, I mean Kitty Callan.
Oh, that's better yet.
And Harry James is going to be Kitty's father.
Wait a minute, Danny. What are you going to be?
I'm going to be Cupid. Dan Cupid.
A wee, winsome little cherub who runs around shooting golden arrows and makes love bloom all over like a vepchigo. That's me.
That I've got to see.
Oh, you won't be able to see me, Evie. Nobody can see Cupid. You see, he's invisible. Harry, could we have a little romantic music to kind of set the scene, kind of?
As our romantic scene opens, a tiny white car with a big red heart painted on the hood is speeding down the street on a very important mission with Danny K. Cupid at the wheel.
When your heart goes bumpity-bump,
Hey, put over to the curb.
I don't wanna.
You don't wanna?
No.
Say, who's driving this cab? I can hear somebody, but I can't see nobody.
Well, naturally you can't see me. I'm invisible.
You're what?
Invisible.
Oh, you mean invisible.
That's what I said. Invisible.
Come on, now stop your stalling.
Oh, this man talks funny, don't he? Stalling, he says. Who's stalling?
I have a good mind to run you in. Who are you anyhow?
I'm Danny K. Cupid.
Cupid? Why, you little mugwump. Mugwump?
Oh, what's a... Who's a mugwump?
You are.
Oh, you know what? I think I'm gonna shoot a love arrow on you.
Something stung me.
Oh, boy. I stung him.
Why, you little...
Yes?
Kiss me. I'm a buttercup.
Whoopee! Ain't love marvelous? Well, I gotta go to 118 Maple Street and do some troubleshooting. So long, officer.
Goodbye, darling.
In the meantime, I'm gonna tune in on my special Teflon Television snooping machine and see what's going on. Oh, gee, look at that.
Ma, we gotta do something about our daughter, Kitty. She's a pretty girl, but she just don't know how to catch a man.
Worse than that, Pa, she don't know how to let a man catch her.
Say, you know, she didn't even get a single Valentine today.
Come to think of it, you old buzzard, you didn't get me anything either.
Oh, well, I think I'll go out to the front yard and see if I caught anything in my bear trap. Gee, what a beautiful night. And me all alone.
Hello there, Kitty Pooh. Don't be so downhearted.
What? Who's that, a man?
No. Oh, no. I'm little Danny Cupid, and I'm invisible. And I'm glad you can't see me.
Why?
'Cause I ain't got no clothes on.
What?
Oh, don't worry. I got my bow and my arrows, and I'm gonna get you a fella.
Oh, I'll never have a fella. I'm 19 years old and I'm not even engaged. I'll probably never get married.
Oh no! Don't give up, my little smitten kitten. Remember, a man without a woman, or a woman without a man, was never part of paradise's plan. It's like a poached egg without a piece of toast. Philadelphia, without the Saturday Evening Post. Georgie Nathan, without a plate to roast. And to make a man and woman rhyme, the wedding bells must chime. It's never too late to mend Mendelssohn. Ding dong, ding dong, dell. Two hearts are at journey's end, O son. When the people hear the steeple bell, without the strain of Lohengrin, love is Misha or Yasha, without a violin, it's never too late to Mendelssohn. Ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, ding dong, dell.
You're so encouraging, Cupid. I've been waiting so long for Prince Charming to come galloping to my side.
Oh, there you are. You see, that's just a little example of Cupid's super snooper duper, if I can't get your man, nobody can, curb service.
Oh, how wonderful. A knight in shining armor.
Hi, beauteous one. I wish to whisper words into thy shell-like ear.
Yes? What do you wish to whisper?
You got a bucket of water for my horse.
Oh, my. This fella's tough. He's as tough as a hip up on top of the omnibus. I'm going to need a super sharp arrow to pierce his armor.
Hey, what's that? Hey, stop shooting them holes in my armor. Ah, you missed me. Ow!
Ha, ha, ha. That's my delayed action arrow.
What happened? All of a sudden, I feel romantic. Kiss me. Kiss me. Kiss me.
Hey, you better turn around. You're talking to the horse.
Ah, my knight. Raise your helmet so I can see your face.
Very well. Here I am.
Oh, no. I've been robbed.
Oh, I got to do something drastic to overcome that puss. This is truly a... psychological moment. Oh. They wrote some big word in here. It's too big for a three-year-old child. I better use a double-dipped arrow.
Oh! Oh, you beautiful, beautiful knight.
I sure fixed her 20/20 vision. Now, come on, you two. Start necking.
Who's doing that talking? Your kid brother?
No, that's Cupid, Daniel K. Cupid.
Where?
Oh, you can't see me, Mr. Man. I'm invisible. Go ahead, Chuck. Kiss her.
Oh, no, I won't kiss her while you're here. Run along now and leave us two alone.
I don't wanna.
Oh, come on.
I don't wanna.
You've done your job. Run along.
I wanna watch.
Oh, please, Cupid. Be a good kid and run along.
Uh-uh. Oh, wait a minute. Here comes a message on my walkety-talkety.
Calling Dan Cupid. Calling Dan Cupid. Go to 230 Park Avenue. An arrow is needed. That is all. Valentine.
Cupid to headquarters. Cupid to headquarters. What did you say that address was?
230 Park Avenue. Get going.
I don't wanna.
Why not?
That's Tommy Manville's address. He don't need no arrow. Oh, no.
Well, Danny, how'd I do in the play? Was I convincing as the lover?
Well, you convinced me. Convinced me that Van Johnson has nothing to worry about.
Oh, didn't I act all right?
Well, that's just the trouble, Ina. You see, you were acting. You weren't living the part. Now, according to Stanislavski...
Stanislavski? What is that Stanislavski? Van Johnson spelled backwards?
No, Lionel. Stanislavski was the famous Russian director who founded the Moscow Art Theater.
Never heard of him.
Well, Lionel, his teachings are being followed throughout the world. Let me give you a picture of one of his disciples. Who is the world's greatest actor? And how did I get that way? Who made me a genius, the greatest projector who ever wore a toupee? Who made me most miserable Hamlet, the deadest Romeo who died for his bride?
who made me most awful Dr. Jekyll, and then made me Hyde.
Stanislavski, Stanislavski of the Moskia, he understands Stanislavski, a director from the heart.
I will never forget the day I first met the great master. He took me by the hand and beat my head against the wall.
And in one word, he told me the secret of the great Stanislavski method. Suffer!
That's all.
Suffer! You must live before you give. Suffer! You must ache before you make. Suffer! You must think before you stink. Suffer! 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 Suffer!
Hello.
Suffer! And the audience suffers with you. Stanislavski, I will never forget the day they give me first part to play. I'm supposed to play part of sailor. But first I must suffer. What I'm going to do? I join Navy, become sailor. First day out, big storm. At first, I was afraid I was going to die. Then I was afraid I wasn't going to die. But I suffered. I came back to Moscow, and in this part, I was wow. Here is what the great critic, Georgine Yasha Sasha Vladimir Nathan, said. Господин Горяченко, зачем это наших блах? Типлис, красивый, большой, а люди там тоже. Здравствуйте, не здесь из нас, в этом месте из нас, не дроснеди, блястите, блед. Just like in America, 3.5 stars. So if you want career on stage, you mustn't dream of merely acting. Use the Stanislavski method of mental chiropracting. Be a tree, be a sled, be a purple spool of thread, be a storm, a piece of lace, a subway train, an empty space. Take it fast, take it slow. Hello, Mo, hello, Joe. I just got back from a wonderful show. Stanislavski, Stanis. I will never forget the day Luella Hopper said I stink. I was playing part of stable boy. It was in great Chekhov tragedy. It was beautiful. Everybody died. I also played part in great Chekhov comedy. Everybody died. But they died happy. This makes it funny. But I will never forget the day of my greatest triumph. I was playing part of antique mahogany bureau. So convincing, in the third act, my drawers fell out. And who is the man who loosened my screws? Who pulled me all apart? Stanislavski. Stanislavski of the Moskvi.
Boy, that Stanislavski method is really something, ain't it, Ken?
Well, Lionel, the Stanislavski method of acting may be amazing, but it doesn't compare with the Pabst Blue Ribbon method of blending.
You have to suffer with that method, too?
No, on the contrary, the Pabst method is happy blending.
Well, that sounds good. Elucidate, Niles.
Well, Lionel, it's the method of blending never less than 33 fine brews, all blended together as only Pabst can do it, to achieve that delicious, full flavor you find only in Pabst Blue Ribbon.
So far, you intrigue me. Go on.
In Pabst, you'll find the most tingling, appetizing flavor that ever flowed from a bottle. A smooth, even goodness that makes you say, this really is a great beer. So order it with confidence and serve it with pride.
That's for me. From now on, you can consider me a booster of the Pabst method. We'll go places together.
Ah, great. And no matter where you go, there is no finer beer, no finer blend than Pabst Blue Ribbon.
Right you are, Ken. And now, Before we pack our little duffel bags and hire us hence, I'd like to do a little pitching for a very vital cause. You know, many times when I've entertained our soldiers in camp shows and had the privilege of talking with them personally, I've been really impressed by the way they admire and respect the men of the Merchant Marine. Now, our soldiers know that without these men, the weapons for victory could never be delivered to the fighting fronts. And right now, more and more merchant seamen, mates, engineering officers, and seamen with AB ratings are needed to do and carry on this big and important job. So, if you were one of the 200,000 experienced AB seamen now working in shore jobs, send a collect telegram today to Merchant Marine, Washington, D.C., giving your qualifications and stating the job you want to fill. Remember, nothing takes the place of experience at sea. No green hand can fill the job waiting for you. So send that telegram tonight, now, and back up our men by going back to sea.
Well, I know that every qualified man listening will answer that call, Danny.
I hope so. And by the way, to all you listening friends of mine, I send a happy Valentine. May all your days be glad and bright and very merry. Good night.
This program was directed by Dick Mack and was brought to you by the Pabst Brewing Company of Milwaukee, Wisconsin, and Peoria, Illinois. The Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's it for this week. We'll be back next week with more old-time radio. I hope you can join us then. Till then, this is Jim Dolan thanking you for listening.